Let's jump into the last part of this series called Becoming. It's been 6 weeks we've been talking about this. This is the longest series I think I've ever done. I think it's the longest one we've ever spent talking about one topic, but I hope it's worth it. I hope that it shapes something in you and it shapes something in us as a church. But just because the series is being completed today, it's done, doesn't mean this idea of becoming is done. Okay? This is something we're going to hear about. I think it's just an us thing. Those guidebooks, those weren't just for this series. We'll always have those available for you. As you use them and you run out of pages to write and you run out of room for them, you can always get more. If you go to Discover Track, which is we'd love for everybody who's new. Frankly, I love you've been here for 40 years. I'd love you to go through the Discover Track. In week 4, we'll talk about becoming and this idea of being more like Jesus every day. I think it's a DNA thing for us. I think God is putting this in our church because it's good for us. I think it's good for us to push back against the kind of the generic idea of what does it mean to be a Christian or to call ourselves a Christian. You know, Christianity is such a cultural thing in our world, right? And what we want from this is to push past the generic idea of it and ask the question, what does it really mean to be a follower of Jesus? What does it really look like to be a follower of Jesus? And so that's what we've been talking about. These past 6 weeks or 5 weeks, and today's the sixth, that's what we've been talking about. What does it mean? And so what we've tried to do is give you a picture. What we've tried to do is give you something to grab a hold of that you can allow yourself to filter life from. Am I really a follower of Jesus? So for the last time during this series today, I'm going to bring to you the wording, the picture of what that filter is and ask the question, do we see and feel and act like Jesus in our lives? Do we see, feel, and act the way we saw Jesus do it when he walked on this earth? How are we doing that? I'm hoping that as we walk away from this, you'll hear those three words the rest of your life. Not because they're perfect words or perfect picture, just because it gives us something to grab a hold of. Now, I told you the first week, I said the first one kind of led us off, but by the end you'd get the complete picture of what all this was. And so here we are in the end. I want to give you the full picture. Because there was not just one line, there was two lines to this see, feel, act that had built on each other. The first 3 weeks, if you remember, was we need to see the truth about God, which moves us. Something inside of us, a movement happens where we feel passion for God, which inspires us to act in surrender to God. Which allows us to act in surrender to God. And what this does, it changes our relationship with him. But it not only changes our relationship with God, it allows us to walk out, to live out, to begin to live the first of the two greatest commandments that Jesus gave. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. The truth is, the reason I walk through that's pretty simple. I want you to have a dynamic relationship with God. I'm worn out on the idea of just the generic, I'm a Christian. I'm worn out on the title of this. I want us to have a dynamic relationship with God where you go, I can't imagine not having this. One where it's life-giving and you depend on it for everything that you experience in life. That's what that's about. But that was the top line. And it built into a second line. It built into something more. It was something that continued for us. And if you are here for that beginning part in that transition, you'll know the phrase that I say, that when your relationship with God changes, what else changes? Our relationships with others. Always. When our relationship truly changes with God, our relationships with others will change as well. And I believe this is a key indicator. This is that red light to look at. What's going on in my life? Are my relationships with others changing? Because as I grow closer to God, I will grow in my healthiness and my purposefulness with other people. My relationships will change. So the bottom line that builds on the top that we've been learning, get the bigger picture, is when we see the truth about God, we'll see value in others. We'll feel, it just moves in us to feel compassion for others. And it leads to the third one today, which is where we are. Lead us to act in service to others. That last part is today. It gives the complete picture. It gives what we were going after. The fullness of all this is when we see value in others, we'll feel compassion for others, which will lead us to a place where we act in service to others. Just like we act in service to God, we give ourselves away to Him, we'll act in service to others and give ourselves away to them. When our relationship with God changes, our relationship with other people will change as well. And when that happens, we get to begin to live out that second of the two greatest commandments, that we will love our neighbor as ourselves. When Jesus said these things, I think he meant these things. I don't think it's something that should get old to us. I don't think that's something that should just become a cliche to us. I think these two commandments should move us and develop in us, become who we are. Love our neighbors as ourselves. And isn't that really what act in service is? How we live out life with other people, isn't that what it's saying? See, when you see value in others, we'll feel compassion for others. And it needs to translate into something. It can't just stay there. And that's where James last week, Pastor James, did a fantastic job of talking about that feeling compassion. But he stopped short of what comes next. He stopped short of the actions. He did it on purpose. Because he was talking about creating that heart of tenderness, heart where we view people and that we want to not just see value in people, but our compassion grows in. But he stopped short. But if he continued, he would say that compassion needs to translate into something. Sometimes we stop short in life where we think things, we feel things, but do we act out? Do we follow through? And that last part is once you feel that compassion, there's something needs to translate in our actions. And this may seem really simple, because I see this on Facebook all the time. They're just like, would people, you know, just life rules, just be kind to people. Just be better to people. Just treat people with respect. Can't we all do this? And it's like, yeah, this is simple. But is it? If it's so simple, then why are our relationships so complicated? If it's so simple, then why are our relationships so messy? Why isn't that we don't naturally act out in service to others? If it's so simple. And what does that even look like? You ask yourself that question, what does that even look like? When I feel compassion for somebody, what does it look like to act out in service to somebody? I think sometimes we need to go back to the beginning. When I was talking about acting in surrender, you know, a few weeks ago, I said, we won't act in surrender unless we see a truth about God. We don't act in surrender to something that we don't see a great truth of. We won't give ourselves away. Well, that's how this plays out with people as well. If we don't see value in people, we won't act in surrender. I mean, act in service to people. We have to go back to the beginning. Because if we don't see value in others, we won't feel compassion for others. And if we don't feel compassion for others, what is inspiring us? If we don't feel compassion for others, then what's inspiring us to act in service? And this is what happens, is we don't see people correctly, so it doesn't translate into actions. And this is what I mean. Your maybe acting out in service to others has become, maybe there's a wall or there's a disconnect because maybe you see people as obstacles. Maybe there's a problem in how we see people, and that's why service isn't what you'd say your life is about to others. That you see in Jesus, but maybe we aren't living that out completely because we see people as obstacles. It's us against others. You don't mean to do this. I don't mean to do this. We don't mean to turn people into obstacles, but sometimes in life, we get so focused on what we've got to accomplish. We get so focused on what we need to do. We get so focused on the vision of what our life is to be about, our purpose, that we see people as getting in the way. We see people as annoying. We see people as in obstacles. Now, if you don't believe me, we're gonna put this to the test when you leave today. I'm not usually out there when we leave the parking lot, but I hear stories, okay? I'm usually talking to people in here. But it's not the easiest thing getting out of our parking lot, right? That stinking service road too, I hate that thing. But it's gonna put this to the test. You get in your car, you're gonna leave our parking lot, you're gonna get on the service road, and you're gonna go whatever direction you go, then you're gonna get on McFarland. When you leave here, I know you have a purpose. You either gotta eat lunch, you have a few errands to run. Sunday afternoon, I'd like to kind of take a little nap. I'd like to relax a little bit. Tomorrow's a big day. I'd like to prep for maybe the new week. You've got something to do. You put your time in here, yeah? But I got things I gotta do. And so this is gonna put to the test, do you turn people into obstacles? When you're leaving out here and someone takes the lane from you, how are you with that? What about when you're on McFarland Boulevard and people are going slower than you want to? Okay, so normally you look at the car and you're like, I'm cool with this car. I don't care what car you drive. I'm good with you. But the moment, today, remember these words, you're gonna feel guilty in like 30 minutes, okay? Someone's gonna come in front of you and you got something to do. Do they become an obstacle to you? Do they become that thing that it's me against you getting where I wanna go? You know, we get out here 11:25, why? Because the Baptists get out 11:30. No, I don't know if they do or not. I don't know if they do. They get out at 12, that's why you come here, right? No. But I don't like when I go to Hooligans after lunch and that long line is like, I gotta wait like 17 deep. Like, people become obstacles, right? Life can quickly turn into a me against you situation. You don't mean it, but we get so focused on life, so focused on what we have to accomplish. The good thing, this isn't just a you thing. It's not just a me thing. It's not just a Baptist thing or a Hooligans thing. Like, this is just a life thing. And I know that because I look at scripture and go, do I see evidence of this? And so I see in Mark chapter 10, I look at the disciples. I'm gonna read this for you. Mark chapter 10, verse 35, it says, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. That's an incredible line. Like, try that tomorrow, okay? Maybe we can do that, I don't know. They had a better relationship with him than I did, right? They saw him, but what do you want me to do for you, he asked. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other on your left in your glory. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized the baptism I'm baptized with? I tried to say that 10 times in a row this week. Try to say, just for fun, say that line. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? Like, that's good. Okay. Has nothing to do with anything. But we can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. See, I did practice. That's good. But to sit at the right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those whom they had been prepared. Now here's the part. When the 10 When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. The news got back. They tried to cut in line. They tried to get what they wanted. John and James had their eyes on the prize and they were jockeying to get ahead. This is what we do. Even in the disciples, it became them versus the others. How do I get ahead of the other 10? This is what we do so naturally. Even when people, I think they like the other ones. They're spending all their time with them. But on some level, do we turn people into, hey, let's sneak ahead here. It's us against you. This is what we turn our relationships into. That can come between you and acting in service to others. But we kind of know better this, right? Like you laugh at it because you're like, yeah, I shouldn't do that. Like that's when I'm in my, like bad Scott mode. Like I'm not a really good person when I do that. So I need to push back against it. So maybe you don't often see people's obstacles. Maybe you go one level up and you see people as peers. Us equal with others. Maybe that's how you see them. This is a good thing, right? You're like, Scott, I don't know where you're going with this, because this is a good thing, right? It's good to push through the seeing people's obstacles to see being people's equals. It seems logical. It fits our paradigm of thought. People should be our equals, right? Or is it? Or is it? Is this really should be our thought or not? Maybe you're on the fence. Yes or no here. Because most of the time in life, this is put as the end game. You see this everywhere. The idea of equality. You see this put in front of us. Like this is what we're trying to get to, is people being equal with others. Don't be against other people. Make them your equal. It kind of fits, right? This was no different for Jewish people. This is our culture, equality. This is the culture they would have been brought up in. Because their system was built on the law. And the law was all about fairness. And so I read in Exodus 21, we kind of give you a picture of what equality would have looked like for the Jewish people when the Old Testament was written. And what I'm going to read for you, this right here, is kind of like when relationships get tough and something goes bad between us. This is how they handle it. But if there's a serious injury, you are to take life for life. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. You get that? Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. And you may look at this and you're like, that sounds kind of harsh, right? Can you imagine that being our culture? But then I look and I go, yeah, you can, because this is what we do. Just in a more subtle way. We live in a place where we just want things to be just. We want things to be equal. We want maybe not always the physical actions, but this is what we want for life. You do. You do it every day. The mindset that says, I'll do for you if you'll do for me. The mindset that says, you respect me, I'll respect you. This is what we do. Think about when you do something for somebody and they don't reciprocate, have you ever held that against somebody? Because it only seems right. I did this for you. Why aren't you doing it for me? We want this equality thing. Without even realizing it, we turn our relationships into you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. It feels right. It feels really, perfectly fine. But then we read scripture. When we read Jesus comes, this whole series of becoming, we're like, is this what Jesus modeled? It feels right because this is what our instincts tell us. It's natural. But what if we need to be pushed back past our natural instincts into something different? What if it makes sense in your head that equality is a good thing, us being equal with other people is a good thing, But what if Jesus comes into the picture and it's like, we need to kind of push past that? Maybe Jesus is calling us to the third way we can look at relationship and see people as more important. Maybe this idea of acting in service is not always something we live out because we see people as obstacles. Maybe seeing them as equals isn't the best way, and Jesus comes in and goes, how this is lived out is when you see people as more important, us being for people. Matthew 38 says, you have heard it said, eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. You this morning have heard it said, eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, don't resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. If anyone wants to sue you, take your shirt and hand over your coat as well. If anyone forced you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you and not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You heard that verse before? I know you know that first part because we just read it today. Eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. You can find that in the Old Testament. But you know the context for that part where it says, if someone forced you to go to 1 mile, go the next? You know the context for that? This is what those people would have heard and understood. The Jewish law would have been if a Roman military person had come to them and said, hey, carry my backpack, which would weigh around 100 pounds. They would take the backpack and they'd have to walk 1,000 paces, 1 mile-ish. If they didn't, this would be looked at as rebellion. If they didn't, this would be looked as disrespectful. If they didn't, this is punishable. They knew this. Someone asks you, walk a mile, walk two. Maybe Jesus is trying to get a message across to his early followers. Is he trying to get a message across to his early followers? To serve others isn't just to do what you've been told you have to do. It's a completely different lifestyle. Becoming like me is going to have you view life with a different lens. I think Jesus is trying to build new DNA in them as I think he's trying to build new DNA in us to say, we don't live like the world. They ask you to go 1 mile. That's what you're supposed to do. Go a second mile. We operate from a higher standard. Maybe Jesus is just reinforcing what he's already told them in Mark chapter 10. I stopped earlier with James and John. I stopped in verse 41. This is what Jesus does after James and John try to cut in and get to be on the right and left of Jesus. He says, it says Jesus called them together. The other 10 are indignant, it says. They're ticked. Come talk to me. He said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be servant. He's speaking right to James and John. Can you imagine the shame that they're feeling? I'm trying to cut in. I'm trying to get mine. You guys are in my way. I'm trying to get in front of you. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave to all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give life as a ransom for many. I think this is just another place Jesus is saying we live differently. We do things differently. If you truly want to become like me, you're going to have to live differently in a way that only makes sense when I'm put in the picture. Because in the world, this doesn't make sense. They're going to go, why'd you go 2 miles when you only told you to go 1 mile? Well, because we do things differently. Once we see value in other people, it moves us to feel compassion for people, which inspires us to act in service as a lifestyle, not an on and off switch, not a I'm going to go on a missions trip, not I'm going to go do this one project. Not a, oh, there's something, I turn it off, I turn it on. He's like, this is just a lifestyle. Throughout this series, we've been looking at different people, and different people have come up, but one consistent person has been a guy named Paul. And the reason that Paul has been brought up is because he lived this out. It wasn't just fancy words and declarations for other people to do. It was real deal for him. Becoming more like Jesus. This was Paul's life when he saw the truth about God. He felt a passion for God, then completely acted in surrender. Well, Paul begins to write to the church and he's saying, hey, I have a lifestyle I want you to live. I have a calling for you. And one of the letters he wrote really inspired me when it came to active service. And it gave me the picture. And it's changed how I live life. It's a view that I want you to live life from when we talk about serving other people. And it's found in 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy, I believe, is his last letter. And Paul's about to die. And he's sitting in prison. He's in prison because life wasn't about him. It costs him something all the time, how we live life. And this is some of his final words to people who are following him. 2 Timothy chapter 4 says, "For I am already being poured out like a drink offering. I am being poured out as a drink offering. And the time of my departure is near. I fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Now there's in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all have longed in his appearing." I believe when Paul went through life change, he realized the only way to live life was to follow the example of Jesus. And the example he saw from Jesus was a life that was completely poured out. I see these words. Like this word poured out, like just changes something in me. I don't know when I read that, when this is not the only time Paul says this. You can look at this in Philippians. He talks about being poured out. I think he understands life with us, that we're gonna pour ourselves out for something, but maybe some of us won't be poured out for something that matters. And so he's telling these early church followers, you need to be, like Jesus followers, that you need to be poured out for something that matters, that he's fought this good fight, he's coming to the end, he's gonna receive his reward. Poured out. You ever thought about your life as being poured out? That we often feel poured out, but do we get poured out in the way that we see Jesus being poured out? See, I think Paul knew the words that Jesus spoke in the Last Supper to his disciples, and we see this in Luke chapter 22, where Jesus says, he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it. And he gave it to them saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup saying, "This cup is the new covenant, my blood, which is poured out for you." Jesus' death and resurrection, this is how I view it, was a pouring out of himself for others. And Paul looks at Jesus and he's like, I want to do that. It wasn't something people could pay back. It wasn't fair. He didn't look at people getting in his way. He just gave himself away. He poured out. So Paul looks at Jesus and goes, that's how I want to live life. And even to the end of the days, he pours himself out to show people Jesus. He pours himself out to model Jesus. This is the way to live. So I look at this life and I ask myself, what does a poured out life look like? What's a poured out life look like? And so I want to give you quick thoughts, and I'm not going to actually walk these out. This is going to be for you, but I thought about four things, and you can add to the list yourself. What are things that make someone a poured out person? What does it look like to be poured out? If you're interested in living the life the way Paul lived, if you're interested in living the way Jesus lived, what would pouring out look like? Well, I think poured out people, they don't serve on their own terms. They don't serve on their own terms. They are people that just look at others and say, how can I help you? It's not about me. I see people do this in the church all the time. in youth ministry. How can I help you? I just want to serve. I see it in children's. I see it in groups. I see it in first impression. I don't care what door I'm at. I don't care what I do. Just what do we want me to do? Pour it out. People say, I just am here to serve. It's not on my own terms. I think pour it out people, they don't serve out of obligation. Poured out people don't serve out of obligation. They serve out of joy because they realize to be poured out is to be more like Jesus. Be more like Jesus just is a joy-filled thing that I'm living out my life in a way the world doesn't live, and it's not about obligation. I think poured out people, they don't wait to be asked. They're always looking and offering. They realize that life has opportunities, so my eyes are open. They don't wait to be asked to serve. They're looking. They're asking themselves. And last one is they're prayerful and sensitive to the Spirit. The reason I say this is because as God reveals something to them, they don't wait. They just jump in the game. They're ready to go. I see this in Paul's life. Just God goes, this is what you're going to do. And he's like, okay, I do it. He's sensitive to the Spirit. And this is what I want to get to as we complete this picture today. I want to be a poured out person. The question is, do you want to be a poured out person? And this is the image I want you to go home with today. I think a lot of us, we want to be poured out people, but you're exhausted. But you're completely exhausted and you're like, I don't know how to pour out more. Can I tell you something during worship today? I was not ready to speak today. In our morning prayer session, you can ask them, I told them I was completely insecure and I was not passionate, emotionally ready to bring stuff today. I don't know why. But then during worship, I just felt myself being stirred, becoming excited to pour myself out in front of you today. Here's why. Because as I was worshiping, God began to take what he has and began just to fill me. What happens in life is you're not able to pour out and serve other people because you were empty. And so you had nothing to give. And some of you in this room, you are empty. You've got nothing to give. And so what you need is to be like Scott during worship and God just begins to pour in. Because you are called to serve. You are called to pour out. You are called to give away. I believe at the end of my life, I want to say I'm almost done being poured out. I want to be able to say at the end of the day, I live my life the way Jesus lived, and I just poured myself out for other people. It wasn't about hoarding, so I had enough at the end. It's like I'm just pouring myself out. That's what acting in service to others is we, just like that top line, we surrender everything to God. When we act in service, we just give ourselves away completely. But some of us, we're empty. Scott, how can you possibly ask me to give anymore? I've got nothing to give to people. I think some of us need to go back to God and go, God, I need you to fill me up. Because if I'm going to give to other people, I got to have something that you give me. But here's the problem. As you give to other people, you're going to become empty again. There are moments in your life when you're going to feel empty again. And you're like, I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus. How do I feel empty again? This wasn't supposed to be this hard. That's why you go back. God, I depend on you. I'm gonna keep giving. I'm empty again. God, I gotta come back. You know why I gotta come back? Because my calling to serve other people never ends. My calling is not to look at people as obstacles. My calling is not just to consider people equal with me. My calling is to look at other people and say, you're more important, because that's how Jesus did. As an offering, he sacrificed and emptied himself for other people. This is why Jesus always left and went to pray. He had to be filled up by his Father. And so as I say today, some of you are like, I can't act anymore. I can't serve anymore. I can't give myself away anymore. I'm already poured out. Maybe you are, then get filled up. Maybe that's why I felt that way today, because God needed to give me the example again for myself personally. Scott, you don't have what it takes to pour yourself out for your people. That's why you come to me to fill up. Maybe God's just good to me that way, where I spend a whole morning going, I'll do it because that's what I do. But God's like, I need to remind you again so you can say it from a sincere heart. I love pouring myself out, but there are days I feel tired and worn out. I need to be reminded to go back. And that's what this becoming is all about. That's why we make these guidebooks. That's why we want you in groups. That's why we want you to be in relationships. That's why we want you to continue to go back to him to fill yourself up. You fill yourself up so you can pour yourself out. I'm gonna pray. Heavenly Father, help us to be people that pour ourselves out every day and never give up. And God, those moments that we feel like we have nothing else to give, may we realize that's the way it's supposed to be, because we depend on you to fill us up. God, we want to see value in others so we can just feel compassion for others, so we can act in service to give ourselves away to the world, because this is how we show them Jesus. But Jesus, we need you to fill us up so we can give them Jesus. God, help us to be a church that says we're not about ourselves, but we're about our Heavenly Father, and we're about giving people everything we've been given in him. God, in this, we begin to become more like you every day. It's your name we pray. Amen.